T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
A balk has been called on Porcello. He stepped back off the rubber calling time, but I guess he never got time. And Phil Cuzzi, you probably heard him, said that's a balk. So it is a 3-0 lead for Toronto.
Recapping the Red Sox loss against the Blue Jays.
There's a drive to right field. This is hit pretty well. Mookie going back, looking up, back by the grandstand, and into the bullpen. A home run for Eric Sogard, and it is 6-0 Toronto.
Dial 617-779-7937. Red Sox Review with Brian Barrett on WEEI.
All right, well, your Boston Red Sox are now 18-19 at home. They are 8 games back of the New York Yankees, and they just dropped 2 out of 3 at home against the Toronto Blue Jays. What do you make of this team right now, the reigning defending champs? 617-779-7937. It felt good yesterday when the Red Sox on Friday night had that 7-5 win. They're coming off that, and you're feeling good yesterday because they're up 6-0. And ever since they took that 6-0 lead, it has just completely fallen apart for the Red Sox. The bullpen failed them yesterday. Today was the starting pitching. Rick Porcello did not show up. He did not have his fastball whatsoever. Not that he's ever going to throw 95, 96. We know he doesn't have that. But he's throwing 89, 90 miles an hour today. Rick Porcello throwing 89, 90 miles an hour. That is batting practice to these hitters. I don't even care that it's the Blue Jays who suck. You're throwing 89, 90 in terms of your fastball. And for whatever reason, it seems like Rick Porcello, he's either in a situation where he's cruising, like he'll have 10 straight batters that he retires in a row, or it's one of these things where he has a terrible inning. And it seemed like today was that terrible inning when it came in the 6th inning for him in this game, where he even balked, as you just heard Josh Lewin on the call here on WEEI. So he even balked in this game. But walks that are uncharacteristic of Porcello, he had what, 4 walks in the game? I get one of them was intentional. And you also factor in that he can't avoid the big inning. Like today, the 3 runs in the 6th inning, this is something that we see when Rick Porcello doesn't have his stuff. This is what happens. The runs pile on. You think back to that Yankee start, what, 2 weekends ago now, where he gives up 4 hits in a row. This is kind of what happens to Rick Porcello. It's either he's cruising or he can't get out of an inning. I even think back to the Rays start a couple of weeks ago where he couldn't get out of that inning and he ends up giving a hit to Kiermaier that brings in 2 runs, right? He couldn't get out of that inning where Kiermaier gets him, burns him for 2 runs in that particular scenario. So Rick Porcello, when it's bad, it's really bad. He has some awful starts that he'll put out there, like the Yankees start, like the Rays start, like today's start. It's really hit or miss with this guy. There's no in-between with Rick Porcello. At least the one thing you can count on, he will give you innings. He will give you innings, but it's real hit or miss. And today, that was concerning that he didn't have his fastball, 89, 90 miles an hour. So Rick Porcello didn't have his fastball today. And then you go back to Friday night, Chris Sale didn't have a slider. So these are two guys you're depending on in your rotation. Each of them was missing a pitch in their start this weekend, which is just atrocious to think about. Now, I also want to get to the bullpen here because this team needs to upgrade quickly, because I don't really know who at this particular point in time you trust in this bullpen. Because even Matt Barnes, who has been great, his numbers are great, he's filthy. But what concerns you about Barnes is he's been in so many high leverage situations this season that you're wondering, is this guy just starting to wear down? Because I gave you the stat a little bit earlier. Tom Karen from Nesson put it out there that when Matt Barnes is pitching with a day of rest or longer, his ERA is 2.19. When working without a day's rest, it's 8.64. So if that's not an indicator that this guy's wearing down, I don't know what is. And part of it has to be that you're asking Barnes, who's somebody that throws 97, 98 miles an hour, right? So he's going to put everything into that pitch to come back the next day after that. So maybe that's part of the reason that I question the pitch selection with Barnes a lot. But maybe that's part of the reason. Maybe part of the reason that Barnes is throwing so many curveballs in some of these outings is because it's tough to bounce back after the prior day, going 20, 25 pitches, throwing 98, 97 miles an hour. Maybe that's why in other days, because his curveball is filthy, he's trying to rely more on the curveball. But what it tells me just by those numbers alone is that you need more high leverage guys, because right now you don't have any. Now, the Embry thing is unfortunate, right? Because if you look at Embry, he was starting to pitch really, really well. You look at Embry's numbers, it was what, his last nine outings, he hadn't given up an earned run. And he was pitching tremendous, but he's suffering from what they call a right elbow extensor strain, okay? So Embry throws a bullpen yesterday, and Alex Cora is doing his interview before the game with Joe Castiglione, and he said he isn't feeling good after it. So that would be something that is a red flag for me. The guy's dealing with an elbow injury. He's trying to make his way back. He had actually been pitching really well. It almost felt like they were starting to give him more high leverage roles, and they did. They gave him an opportunity to close the game a couple of weeks ago. And then what happens to Heath Embry? Heath Embry goes down with an injury, and it looks like he's on the right track. He's going to be back, and Alex Cora said he wasn't feeling good today after he throws a bullpen session. So I don't know when you're going to get Embry back in this bullpen, who clearly had emerged as one of your guys in the bullpen. You think about some of the other guys in this bullpen right now. Brazier, you're not going to rely on him. No one is. Against lefties this season, they have an OPS north of 800. He blew the game against the Indians a while back there where he had a 5-2 lead. Couldn't get out of that. You think about what happens to him last night. You bring him in because Barnes doesn't have it going on, and he walks two consecutive batters. One of them he walked on, what, four pitches? You look at that 17-inning game against the Twins, people are starting to feel better because he came back from the bereavement leave and whatnot. In that 17-inning game, remember, Polanco hammered a ball up Brazier that should have been at least a double if it wasn't for Jackie Bradley Jr. robbing him. And even if you look at Friday night, remember, gives up, comes in with two outs after Josh Taylor was on the mound. He gives up back-to-back singles. Then Guerrero barely misses a home run. So it wasn't like he was sharp in that outing either. So Brazier's somebody I think you have to go forward with, not depending him at all, or not depending on him, I should say, at all, in high leverage situations. And it's not like Cora has been lately. He gave him an opportunity to get back in that high leverage situation, if you will, against the Indians a couple of weeks ago, and I told you, 5-2 lead, he gives it up. You think about Workman, he's a walk waiting to happen. 26 walks and 35 2/3 entering today. And obviously he was down today, was not working, but nonetheless, you didn't need him because you were down 6-1 anyway. But anyway, and really down, what, 6-0 for the majority of the game. But that game against the Twins earlier on in the week, he walks two guys in the eighth inning, a game you think you're going to win, and then after he walks two guys, he gives up the hit to Kepler. And the reason you give up a run there is because you have to walk two guys because Workman doesn't know where the ball's going half the time. His curveball is nasty. I mean, it's ridiculous, but the thing that I would ask you about Brandon Workman right now is how can you feel confident about this guy in a postseason series when you don't know if he's going to throw strikes or not? Remember the tightrope we walked last year with Kimbrel, watching him in the postseason when he had trouble with location? That's the same exact thing you're going to go through with Workman if you get to a postseason series, is you're going to be walking the tightrope if Workman's out there because you don't know if he's going to throw strikes. It's hit or miss with Workman. Some days he may throw strikes, some days he won't. And most of the time, he's going to be out there and at least walk one batter in an inning. That's the reality of what Workman is as a pitcher. At least one of those times, he's going to walk somebody. Now, Josh Taylor has pitched really well as of late, but let's see more from him. Marcus Walden, sorry, don't trust him in high leverage situations. I get he's had a miraculous season for you, and he's a great story and all that, but do you trust that guy's stuff in the playoffs? Because I personally don't. And then you look at Mike Schwarren, he came back to earth, right? So yesterday he was a mess. The three outings before yesterday, too, leading up until that outing, he was not great either. The walks were starting to pile up, where he had five walks in four innings up until yesterday's outing, and then yesterday he was just knocked around. Now, location was the issue yesterday, but this time he was missing the zone. So remember that series of events that transpired. Biggio gets a slider middle-middle that he singles up the middle. Galvis, that does not walk at all, comes up, right? So you don't have to throw the ball in the zone to Galvis. And Schwarren gives him a fastball way too much of the plate that he hammers out of the ballpark to make it 6-3. And then Tellez comes up and he homers slider way too much of the plate. So in the past now four outings for Mike Schwarren, we've seen that location has been an issue. In the three outings prior to yesterday, it was he was walking guys all over the ballpark, right, where he had five walks and four innings of work. And then yesterday, he can't locate pitches. Biggio makes him pay. Galvis makes him pay. Tellez makes him play. Pay, rather. So the issue yesterday was the location again, but the problem with this particular outing was the location was in the middle part of the plate, and his stuff is not great enough. his slider is pretty nasty. It's got a lot of depth, but when he throws his fastball and you get a lot of the plate and you have Galvis up there, he's going to take that thing out of the ballpark. And we saw Biggio, too, hammer one of his fastballs. So that's become an issue with Schwarren. So he's somebody that you can't really depend on at this particular point in time. So as you go through the bullpen, you start to think to yourself, who can you really depend on? And I get people can reference, oh, they were fifth in bullpen ERA coming into today. Well, they have 15 blown saves. And I get not everybody puts a whole lot of stock into bullpen ERA. But how about this? Seven times they've gone into the seventh inning this year with a lead and they've lost that game. Is that good enough for you? That's seven games where your bullpen has had a lead entering the seventh inning and they've given it all back. Matt Barnes has blown five saves. All right, so I just look at this bullpen. It's clearly an issue with this team. It's clearly something that needs to be upgraded. And with the bullpen, for me, it's about comfort. Do you feel comfortable with any of these guys on the mound? Right? Because when you look at the Yankees, you feel comfortable with Ottavino out there. Right? You feel comfortable with Britton out there. You feel comfortable with Chapman out there. And with this Red Sox team, I don't know who you can honestly say, yeah, I feel comfortable with that guy. Because for whatever reason, it's different when Matt Barnes is out there in the ninth inning than when he's out there in the seventh or the eighth inning. He's clearly had issues when you put him in the ninth inning situation. So Matt Barnes is somebody that in terms of when the lights are the brightest, he has not been performing this season. And maybe some of it is he's overtaxed. And if that is the case, that's even more evidence that you need to upgrade this group. And when I look at it from Dave Dombrowski's perspective, you have a good enough team that can compete for a World Series again if you upgrade this thing. And what I fear is that it's going to happen like it did last year. Because, and Rob Bradford was talking about this on the pregame show yesterday with Will Fleming. So I want to give him credit for this because I actually had forgotten that he made this point at the deadline to Dave Dombrowski last year. Because they go out there, they don't do anything at the deadline. So I guess they don't really go out there. Now, they got Nathan Eovaldi. But nonetheless, when Dave Dombrowski last year was asked, why didn't you do anything in terms of the bullpen? He says, because we have Tyler Thornburg and we have Brazier. Now, he was 50% right on that because Brazier performed great last year and not the same guy this year. And he performed well in the postseason. But Thornburg didn't. And Thornburg is somebody that had like five good outings right before the break, as Rob Bradford pointed out yesterday. And then he turned back into a pumpkin. He was a mess. But the reason you didn't get another arm, according to Dave Dombrowski, is because you were relying on Brazier and Thornburg. So this year, if you look at it, there's the same evidence, right? You can't rely on any of these guys with maybe the exception of Matt Barnes. And he's even been kind of off as of late. Workman walks too many guys. Walden doesn't have the stuff. Schwarren's been a little inconsistent and still a young pitcher. So clearly you need to go up there and upgrade this thing. And if it was me, like I said, this is a gunshot wound right now. And I don't want to put a Band-Aid on this thing. You need like major surgery to repair this issue that you have. And so if it's me, if I'm Dave Dombrowski, I want to go out there and give myself multiple bites at the apple. There's going to be a lot of relievers on the market like there are at every deadline. And you need to go out there and get a couple of these guys and get one now so you can see what he can do. Because a lot of these relievers, by definition, they become schizophrenic, right? There's only a couple guys that are great every single year, right? Where you can depend on them each and every year. But at least go out there, get a guy with a track record and take some shots on some other guys, because at least then you know. Because remember, you went out there and Addison Reed, it seemed like at the time, was a good move. And everybody thought it was a good move. And everybody said, yeah, that's going to work out. And Addison Reed was supposed to be the eighth inning guy, if you will, when he comes over from the New York Mets, couldn't handle it here. Whether it's because of the pressure that he was pitching in more high leverage situations, because the Mets, let's face it, that year were in no high leverage situations because their games didn't matter. They sucked. Maybe that was it. But for whatever reason, he didn't work out. So you may identify somebody out there on the market, whether it be Sean Doolittle, whether it be Vasquez, Shane Green, somebody that Dave Dombrowski is obviously very familiar with. Maybe Ken Giles from the Blue Jays. I get he's in the division, but we've seen teams trade guys in the division before. You made a trade with the Rays last year at the deadline to get Eovaldi for Jalen Beek. So we've seen that happen before. It happens all the time. Okay, it's not one of these things where back in the old days you wouldn't trade in the division. If you think it's going to upgrade your roster, you go ahead and you do it. And same with the other team. They're like, oh, if we can take a prospect from one of our rivals for somebody that's not going to help us in the near future, okay, go ahead. Because by the time the Blue Jays are like relevant in terms of winning baseball games at a high level, like competing for the playoffs, it's going to be a couple of years and Giles probably isn't going to be around. So maybe they would be willing to move on from Giles, who we saw this weekend. Guy's got 100-mile-an-hour fastball. Like, I'd like to see that in the Red Sox bullpen. I get that with the Astros, he wasn't great in those high leverage situations, but maybe now he got a fresh start in Toronto. He comes over to the Red Sox. Maybe he can figure it out. This is a crazy guy, by the way, too. Remember, he punched himself in the dugout a couple of years ago. So if it's me, and I'm Dave Dombrowski, I'm getting multiple bites at this apple because I look at it, I just really am scared and fearful that the same mistake they made last year is going to happen this year. Because you look at the schedule, right? Outside of that two games against the Yankees, it's all teams under 500. It's the Tigers of the world. It's the White Sox of the world. You play the Blue Jays again. So I'm fearful that some of these guys in the bullpen are going to get hot. And maybe Dave Dombrowski will say, yeah, we're going to be good. We just need one more arm. No, you need two, three more arms to put into that bullpen. And maybe the good thing about yesterday, maybe the silver lining out of what happened yesterday when the bullpen was just atrocious against the Blue Jays, maybe the silver lining is Dave Dombrowski now realizes, like, okay, this is an emergency. Because the fans all acknowledge it's an emergency. Maybe the guy running the team will now acknowledge, like, this is actually an emergency when the team with the worst average in baseball and the second worst on base percentage in baseball is tearing up your bullpen and having its way with your bullpen. Maybe that's when Dave Dombrowski says, yeah, okay, now I get it. Now it's a serious thing. We got to address this. 617-779-7937, the number. Brian Barrett with you for the next 45 minutes or so on Red Sox Review. Let's get to Owen in Westford. What's up, Owen?
Hey, how are you?
Good. What do you got?
Well, I'm just wondering, you put the nail on the head with the bullpen. It's just that they're all good pitchers, but when it comes to late in the ball games or, you know, when the game's on the line, forget it. And yesterday, it didn't even have to be that. But you also think that Stroman would be available? You know, I love him. They don't get a lot of runs for him, but boy, he can pitch.
He's got his issues. He's got his issues with the Red Sox. I guess you could say the same thing about Price. Price had his issues with the Red Sox. Remember, he had issues with Ortiz before he came over. But Stroman, he's going to be available. I just don't see the Red Sox going after him because, remember, Stroman is somebody that wanted a contract extension from the Jays. They didn't want to give it to him. And before the game, Sean McDonough and Will Fleming were actually talking about this. He's like kind of isolated himself from the team. He's definitely going to be moved, and they'll probably think they're going to get good prospects for him. I don't see the Red Sox giving up anything for Stroman. And I don't think they'll want it. And I know I said like you have trades in the division now, but I don't think they'll give up Stroman, who is like a big piece to the Red Sox, because Stroman's still a young pitcher. I don't see them going after him, but he got out of the Red Sox skin again today. You see, after he came off the mound, he was jawing at the Red Sox bench.
Yeah, that's just the way he is, I guess. You're right. But what about, I know Benintendi's, you know, he's a good young player and everything, but he can be pitched to. And there was a couple of guys during the spring training that really hit good, but I forget their names. Do you think if the price is right, maybe if their team had a good young outfielder and maybe a good closer?
Owen, I appreciate the call. You can grab his line if you'd like. It's 617-779-7937. I don't think the issue is the outfield. I really don't. If you look at it this month, if you look at Mookie, Jackie Bradley Jr., and Andrew Benintendi, all three of them have on-base percentages over 350 in June, and all three of them have OPSs over 800 in June. So I don't think the issue with this team is the outfield. We've got two calls on Benintendi today. Like, if people want to trade Benintendi, I'm not saying I'm the biggest Andrew Benintendi fan. Like, if you're talking about the young players on the team, he's like really low down on the list. Like, Devers is much better, and even Bogarts is only 26. I like Bogarts a lot better. Obviously, you like Mookie Betts a lot better. But in terms of the young players on the team, I'm not like super high on Andrew Benintendi. But it's just weird to me that everybody today is talking about possibly trading Andrew Benintendi. Now, if you can fetch something great this next offseason for Benintendi, like if you're getting a proven commodity, okay, but I don't see you trading Andrew Benintendi now. What are you trading him for? Like, what are you going to get? You're not trying to trade for a starting pitcher like the Yankees are. Like, the Yankees can say, all right, Clint Frazier, who they sent down, they have so many damn outfielders. They're like, all right, we could give away Clint Frazier, who's still, and I get it, he's terrible defensively, but the guy can hit. You can give up Clint Frazier for Madison Bumgarner because you don't need Frazier. At this particular point in time, like, you're not going after a starting pitcher, so you're not going to have to give up somebody of Andrew Benintendi's ilk, if you will. Like, Benintendi's fine where he is right now, and he's actually starting to turn it around because they actually put him where he's comfortable in the lineup, which is that number two spot. Much more comfortable in that number two spot, because remember, at the beginning of the year, the guy was like, what, two for his first, like, 37 at the leadoff position, or three for his first 40, whatever it was. The guy was horrible. They made that weird decision last year, or at the beginning of this year, where Alex Cora, like, remember, the Red Sox did nothing in the winter meetings. And I guess the winter meetings aren't what they once were. But nonetheless, like, he made this big announcement. Oh, we're moving the lineup around. Mookie's moving to second, and Andrew Benintendi's moving to first. Well, both guys have not been the same player since you made that decision. But nonetheless, Benintendi's turned it on over the past month or so. The one thing I would say about Betts is, Mookie was somebody that last year had so many of those like big time moments. I think about the home run off Hap with the grand slam, and that was a huge moment for the team. It just feels like right now with where this team's at, you're going to need one of those tears from Mookie to inject some energy with this team. And I get he's walked more than anybody besides Mike Trout in the American League. But last year, he had a month where he had 9 home runs. He had a month where he had 8 home runs. I'd like to know when that stretch is coming for Mookie Betts, because if you look across the board, the numbers aren't anywhere close to where they were a season ago. And for whatever reason, Mookie has not been able to hit lefties. So at some point this season, I would like to see Mookie Betts get red hot and tear it up for a month like he did on 3 different occasions last year. Where you look through his game log last year, he had 3 months where the guy was absolutely tearing the cover off the baseball. And we haven't seen that once this year from Mookie Betts. We've seen glimpses of it, but we haven't seen Mookie do it for an extended period of time. And everybody else has done it, right? Devers has had his run. Bogarts is still on his run. JD Martinez has pretty much been pretty solid the entire season. Jackie Bradley's red hot right now. Like, at what point, even Vasquez is red hot right now. At what point is Mookie going to put his stamp on this season? Because, quite frankly, we haven't seen it yet. All right. If you want to weigh in on the Red Sox bullpen, some of the issues they had, the fact they lost 2 of 3 to the Toronto Blue Jays, certainly welcome to do that. Also want to get to some Celtics, because Jackie McMullen had an interesting report as it pertains to Al Horford that I want to get to, and it's not good for the Celtics. Your number is 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you on WEI. We'll get you trending here in just a second.
93.7 FM, WEI.
Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talks.
Here comes the money.
It's just easy to take Al Horford for granted because he's such a professional. He's a, you know, a darling of the coaching staff and in the locker room. The young guys really like and respect him, and he always does the right thing. And in fairness to Al Horford, he's doing the exact right thing for himself. And I think the Celtics made him a good offer. I can't tell you what it was. But I do think they did make him a 4-year offer that was a pretty healthy one. And think about that. I think Al's 37 at the end of that contract. So it's not like they said, oh, well, we're going to lowball Al Horford.
All right, that's Jackie McMullen on the Celtics and their relationship with Al Horford. Now, Jackie McMullen, as you just heard there, she says she believes that the Celtics offered him a 4-year contract. So here's my question. If the Celtics did offer Al Horford a 4-year contract, and it was pretty much close to the other offer he's going to get out in the open market, which apparently the rumor is he's got like a 4-year, $110 million contract waiting for him, a max-level contract. If the Celtics actually did offer Al Horford a similar contract to what he's getting from somebody else this summer, whether it be the Clippers or the Dallas Mavericks, the Lakers, all those teams have showed interest, although it seems like the Lakers don't know how to run a salary cap, so they're probably not going to be able to sign him. But nonetheless, if that contract is close to what those teams are offering him, what does that say about the Celtics? Why doesn't Al want to be here if you offered him money that was close to that? So that's the one component of that. That would be a massive issue, because Al Horford, he was the guy that came here first, right? He's the one that took the original max contract from the Celtics. He was the one that was supposed to start all this. And now he's telling you that he doesn't want to play here anymore? That means a couple of things to me. That means, A, he doesn't have the faith in the young guys that maybe the organization does, and B, he doesn't want to be here, which is an issue. If he doesn't want to be here, that's a massive issue, because that's obviously become a narrative around the league that people do not want to play here. Remember, now we're getting back to the days where David West had a decision between the Celtics and the Pacers, and he chose to go to Indiana over playing for the Celtics. Remember, that happened to the Celtics organization. So now we're back in that position again, because perception in that league becomes reality. And look, Kyrie Irving is crazy. We all know this. But Kyrie Irving didn't want to be here anymore. Anthony Davis's agent, Rich Paul, came out and said, my client does not want to be in Boston and will not re-sign with the organization. And now the guy in Al Horford that was a lock, right? Al Horford was a lock to stay here. Everybody said, oh, yeah, they'll figure this out. He's opting out of his contract. No big deal. And he'll sign with the Celtics long term. But if you offered him similar money to what he was getting out in the open market, not a good look for the Celtics. But either way, it's a bad look for the Celtics that Al Horford is gone. Because the other component to this is, well, what if Danny Ainge lowballed him? So there's the first scenario where he offered him similar money and Al didn't want to be around. So that's a bad look to begin with, because I thought people wanted to play here, according to what Danny Ainge is saying. Because remember, Danny Ainge made the statement just a couple of days ago, quote, we have a very attractive franchise to play for, and there's a lot of people who would be dying to come play here. But if Al Horford was one of those guys originally and now he wants to leave, what does that say about your organization and guys actually wanting to be here in Boston and play for your team? It says that that's not true, right? So that's one component. The other component is, what if Danny Ainge lowballed him? Well, that's a bad look for the perception of the organization as well, because you're trying to rebuild your image, if you will, fair or unfair, for free agents in the future, for stars in the future. And if Al Horford doesn't want to be here because Danny Ainge lowballed him, what does that say about how you treat your players? You don't reward your players? Al Horford was the guy that was starting it for you. You were rolling out the red carpet for Al Horford, and he doesn't want to be here anymore? What does that tell you about Al Horford and how players are treated here in Boston and what the perception of the organization is? So it's a bad look either way. With Al Horford leaving, there's no way to justify this as like a good thing for the Celtics. Now, the one thing you look at is in terms of the salary cap and whatnot. Okay, it's so it frees up some salary cap space, if you will, in the future for the Celtics. So I guess as a cause and a result, it's a good thing. But the way it all went down, because it was made out to be like the Celtics wanted to keep Al Horford here. So the Celtics were never saying or never even alluded, never even floated reports out there that they were willing to move on from Al Horford. It was always about they were going to keep Al Horford. So there's no way that this looks good for the organization at all. Especially, I actually believe it would look worse if Al Horford was offered similar money to what he was offered from the Mavericks or the Clippers, whoever it may be, and he decided to leave. Now, I don't blame Al Horford for leaving, because Danny Ainge sold him a vision, right? And the vision was, all right, we're going to get you in here. Then we're going to get Gordon Hayward, and not that it was that guy specifically, but we're going to get somebody else to play with you, and then we're going to make a couple of big splashes. We're going to get two stars. We're going to get Kyrie. We're going to get Anthony Davis, all this, right? Danny Ainge sold Al Horford on a vision that he was going to start this thing in Celtics land. He was going to help build this organization back up to what it used to be, and he was the starting block, right? Well, now all those pieces that were supposed to come after Al Horford, they haven't worked out for one way or another. Gordon Hayward with the injury. You look at Kyrie Irving, doesn't like being in Boston, apparently, and quite frankly, didn't live up to the hype. And now the Anthony Davis thing is off the market. So if you're Al Horford, I don't blame you for leaving. You know you're going to get a max contract somewhere else, and maybe you can go compete for a championship, but either way, you're going to get a max contract somewhere else. And I would also say this, another way this would be a bad look for the Celtics, say if Al Horford signs with somebody like Dallas, right? Because Dallas isn't somebody that's ready to compete for a championship right now, or it's not a team, I should say, that's ready to compete for a championship right now. Now, they have a really nice young core that I really like. Luka Doncic is a stud. He was the rookie of the year. And then you look at Kristaps Porzingis now coming back, and he's only 23 years old, right? So you look at it, Doncic is, what, 21 or 20 years old, and Kristaps Porzingis is 23. With Al Horford, he doesn't, like, finish off their championship puzzle. In fact, he doesn't even fit in their window. He's, like, a decade older than those two guys, right? So it doesn't even go into their championship window. So if he leaves you to go to Dallas, that's just a bad look for the organization, because he's definitely deciding on another young group of players. So he's saying, okay, this group of young players is better than yours, and I don't want to be around your organization anymore. So I just don't know how people that are Celtics fans are justifying this as a good thing for the Celtics long term, that Al Horford didn't want to be here, because the perception is not good. The perception of the Celtics right now is that free agents don't want to play for him. Fair or unfair, Kyrie wanted to leave. Anthony Davis didn't want to come here. And now Al Horford doesn't want to play here anymore after playing here for 3 years. So what does that say about the Celtics organizationally? Now, one other thing I wanted to get to from Jackie McMullen, who is more dialed in than anybody really with the Celtics, is here's something she had to say about Kyrie Irving and how his attitude changed here.
The part of the thing was Kyrie Irving didn't like Boston. I've been told this by many people. He didn't like living in Boston. He just didn't. You know, by the end, he had issues with Brad. By the end, he had issues with Danny. By the end, he had issues with pretty much all of us, right? So.
Okay, so that's Jackie McMullen on Kyrie Irving, that Kyrie just didn't like living in Boston. And this is one that I just can't believe. Now, her reporting, I'm not saying I doubt her reporting. Her reporting is accurate. But I don't understand how this changed for Kyrie Irving in, what, 6 months? Because I remember right before the season, like all of you do, he did a whole thing with the season ticket holders when he said, I'll be here as long as you'll have me. And then right after that, what comes out? The commercial with his father, Dietrich, where him and his father are playing one-on-one at the Garden. He says, I want to have my jersey hung up in the rafters. Essentially, I'm paraphrasing the commercial. But remember that. So he went from 6 months ago loving living in Boston, wanting to be here forever, to not wanting to be here anymore. So what changed in that 6 month period that Kyrie Irving didn't like living in Boston whatsoever? And from my perspective, what changed is the scrutiny. What changed is the pressure. And I don't know what Kyrie Irving thinks is going to happen in Brooklyn. Does he think like the pressure is going to change when he goes to play in the New York media market, if you will? The same pressure is going to be there. So my issue that I have with Kyrie Irving is it seems like he's just looking for excuses, right? The whole time he's looking for excuses, the young guys, the coach, all this different type of stuff. And really, none of it was really warranted. It was, you're not living up to the hype, and you're essentially being a bad leader, or you're being no leader whatsoever. And it seemed like his issue was more about the media as well. Because if you remember, this all started when he was at the All-Star game, and that video emerged where he was holding up the two fingers to Kevin Durant saying two max slots, or at least that's how everybody implied it. And Kyrie Irving, maybe he didn't say that, maybe he did. Whatever the case may be, Steve Bolpet of the Boston Herald goes up to him a couple of days after the All-Star break and he says, hey, do you want to just pour some water on this thing? Like, was giving Kyrie Irving the opportunity. Because think about it from Kyrie's perspective, okay? Even if you did really say that, all you have to do is lie about it right there. And then the story's over. Just say, yeah, what do you think? I'm an idiot. I know there's cameras all over the All-Star game. You think I'd actually do that? But the fact that he actually attacks Steve Bolpet saying all you do is post things for clicks and likes, when first of all, Steve Bolpet didn't post it and he didn't write anything about it until after he talked to Kyrie. So he wasn't posting anything for clicks and likes.
Do it for likes and clicks.
Yeah, Kyrie wanted to attack Steve Bolpet and attack that situation. And the reality is, Kyrie, all you had to do was say, yeah, you guys are idiots. Like, you could have joked around about it, be like, you guys are idiots. You think I'd really say in front of everybody two max slots? And the other thing that I would acknowledge with Kyrie Irving, or the fact that Kyrie Irving should acknowledge himself, is you created a problem for yourself the whole time you were here. Because that's what I think the bigger issue is. I think Kyrie Irving's bigger issue was with the media, not the actual city of Boston, because he was fine with committing to the Celtics verbally, if you will. It's like a verbal commit in college basketball or college football. You were fine doing that just a couple of months ago, 6 months ago. So you were fine with the city then.
And now you have an issue
with the city?
I plan on re-signing here next year.
Exactly. He's the one that said that. Nobody forced him to say that. So when I look at it, Kyrie Irving, you created all your own problems, right? And then when you have this media session before a Knicks game and you come out and say, ask me on July 1st as it pertains to your free agency. He's actually wrong about that. It starts on June 30th this year. But nonetheless, all you had to say then was, I'm not talking about my free agency, right? If you just shut this off, because how often was Kawhi Leonard's free agency actually a story to Kawhi? Like, how often was Kawhi Leonard asked about his free agency? Like, zero times during the season because he wouldn't entertain it. Kyrie Irving is the one that made this a story again because you committed to the organization before the year and then you went back on your commitment. So you did this to yourself. So your whole thing about the media, you having an issue with the media, like, Kyrie, you created all your own problems. All the problems that Kyrie Irving had with the media were things that he created himself. That's the issue that Kyrie Irving had that for some reason he won't acknowledge, because I'm not buying into the fact that Kyrie Irving just didn't like Boston anymore. That doesn't make any sense based on his behavior. Now, I'm not one of these people that is so biased towards the city where I'm like, how could you possibly not like Boston? My whole point about this is that Kyrie Irving was willing to stay here, and then all of a sudden it changed. So what did he fall out of love with? Okay, he didn't like Faneuil Hall anymore? Like, I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So clearly it was the issue he had with the media. That's the issue that Kyrie Irving had. And the problem is Kyrie doesn't realize that he created these whole issues himself. And when you don't perform in Brooklyn, if Brooklyn will even have you, because remember, we talked about this the other night, the New York Post is reporting that they may not be willing, the Brooklyn Nets, to just go after just Kyrie, which I don't blame them. We just saw what just Kyrie did in Boston, right? Kyrie as the main guy, if you will. It got you the fourth seed in the Eastern Conference, and then you end up losing in four consecutive games after winning the first game against the Bucks, where Kyrie went 6 of 21, 7 of 22, 8 of 22, and 4 of 18. So if I was the Brooklyn Nets, I would be thinking about this too. In fact, if I was a franchise, why would I want Kyrie Irving as the main guy? He's proven he's more Robin than Batman. As Batman, his team lost 4-1 to the Milwaukee Bucks. And after Giannis, I would argue that the Celtics had the better roster. They had a better roster than the Bucks, and you lost 4-1, okay? So Kyrie Irving is the main guy? Sorry, I'm not signing up for that whatsoever. Now, one thing, if I was the Celtics and it meant Davis, okay, that's a different scenario. But as the main guy, no, I don't want any part of Kyrie, and I don't know why the Brooklyn Nets would want him as their main guy. The only thing I can think of from a Nets perspective is tickets and popularity, right? Because Kyrie is a star. He's a popular NBA player. Maybe that is why the Nets would want him. Because from a basketball perspective, makes no sense whatsoever. He doesn't elevate your franchise. One other thing real quickly about Kyrie. So Doug Gottlieb this week was filling in for Colin Cowherd. And this is what he had to say about Kyrie. This is a story he told about Kyrie Irving. Kyrie came in one day to a film session, and he was the first one in that film room. He walked up to Brad Stevens, and he said, "What does government mean to you?" Think about this. You're the head coach of the Celtics, and you walk into a film session, and your star point guard, your max-level player, comes up to you, and he just randomly asks you, "Hey, what does government mean to you?" So, according to Doug Gottlieb, Stevens went into some soliloquy saying absolutely nothing because he didn't want to kind of open a trap door any sort of way. And then Stevens said, "What's it mean to you, Kyrie?" And Kyrie said, "Control." Think about this. You're the head coach of the Celtics trying to start off a film session. And this clown comes up to you and says, "What does government mean to you?"
Like, you know, what kind of question is that?
Exactly. What kind of question is that? That's what Steven should have said to Kyrie. What kind of question is that? Imagine that you're showing up to work one day, even if you're just in a normal business, whatever it is, and you just see somebody walking down the hall. "Hey, what does government mean to you?" This guy's a weird dude, man. He really is a weird guy. A really bizarre individual. All right, a lot more to get into. If you want to hop on board, weigh in on the Red Sox dropping 2 of 3 to the Blue Jays, certainly welcome to do that. But coming up next, I want to tell you what I want the Celtics team to be focused on in free agency, because I feel like they're focused on things they shouldn't be. I'll tell you what I want them to do. You're listening to Brian Barrett right here on WEEI.
Ask me July 1st.
WEEI, 93.7 FM.
All right, Brian Barrett with you on WEEI, 617-779-7937 is the number with you to the top of the hour if you want to hop on board here. So we're continuing to talk about the Celtics here. And so Sham Sharania from The Athletic, who's one of the NBA insiders, he's like Woj Jr. He was like Woj's protege, and now they're like competing against each other. And he reported during the draft that the Celtics were interested in Nick Vucevic from the Orlando Magic. Vucevic, by the way, he was an all-star this year, averaged 20-12. But when I tell you this guy is a DH, I really mean he's a DH. He only plays one side of the basketball, plays no defense whatsoever. His feet are absolutely atrocious. So here's some numbers for you to prove the point. So first of all, I didn't show up to the playoffs because Marc Gasol was covering him from the Raptors, and Marc Gasol just said, "Yeah, you're not going to score." So this guy averaged 11 points a game in his 5 games against the Raptors, averaging 20 during the season. So he goes from 20 points during the regular season to 11 points during the postseason, and he did it on 36% shooting and 14% from 3. So offensively, he wasn't the same player in the postseason, not to mention the fact that the efficiency was way down. But defensively is where this guy really has issues. So you look at it in terms of this year in the playoffs, with Vucevic on the court, the Magic had a 122 defensive rating. Okay, that means the Raptors were scoring 122 points per 100 possessions, which would be by far the worst in the NBA from the Magic's perspective. With Vucevic on the court, 122 defensive rating. With Vucevic off the court during the series, 97.9 defensive rating, which would have been the best defensive rating in the NBA this year. So they went from being the worst defense in the NBA this year with Vucevic on the court against the Raptors to the worst, or to the best defense when he was off the court. So that's how bad he is defensively. He's a liability, can't move whatsoever. And for some reason, the Celtics are interested in possibly bringing this guy in. What does it tell you that the Magic aren't just like right away signing this guy to a 5-year max? It's telling you that they don't think he's that good, okay? They don't think he's a great player, okay? And I also look at the fact that you can't just spend your money recklessly if you're Danny Ainge. Like, just because these other guys aren't coming here, the Davis thing isn't working out, the Kyrie Irving thing isn't working out, don't panic. Like, you don't have to spend this money on guys that don't deserve it. That would make the situation worse. Like, giving Nick Vucevic a max contract at the age of 29, by the way, and it's not going to elevate your team, it makes no sense to me whatsoever. It'd be one thing if you're bringing in somebody that's a complete game changer that takes you from being a middle team in the Eastern Conference in terms of a 4-5 seed to the best team. Okay, that's fine. I'll give that guy max money. But Vucevic doesn't make your team any better. In fact, he hurts you defensively, and he doesn't elevate you into a contender. That's what I'm looking for. If you're going to give a guy a max deal at 29, he better make you a contender, and Vucevic doesn't do that. So that's why if it's me this offseason, and if I'm Danny Ainge, the guy that I'm looking at is D'Angelo Russell, because I get it. He doesn't make you a contender right away, but he, first of all, he's cheaper than Vucevic because he's younger. And also, he fits with your timeline now, because what we've been told is you're going young again, right? Because you have Tatum and you have Jaylen Brown. So if you're going young again, D'Angelo Russell's only 23. He's coming off his best season, and you need a point guard. I'm all set with Terry Rozier. I don't need Terry Rozier on this team, okay? Oh, he averaged 16 points per game in the postseason last year. He did it on 40% shooting, and he shot 33% from three, and he was 0 of 10 from three-point territory in that Game 7. This year, all he did was complain and go on ESPN First Take after the season and refer to himself in third person. And now that he finds out Kyrie's going, he wants his role back as the point guard of this team. No, I'm sorry. D'Angelo Russell did it at an all-star level this season. He's a better shooter than Terry. He's a better playmaker than Terry. Much better passer than Terry. Better pick-and-roll player than Terry. I'm going all in with D'Angelo Russell because he actually fits the timeline. I'm not going for these second-tier free agents that are looking for max money like Nick Vucevic. I'm signing D'Angelo Russell to a restricted free agent contract because he's a restricted free agent. And if Kyrie goes to the Nets, I'll take your point guard over here. I'm thinking about it from this perspective, too. He's $8 million less than Kyrie Irving would be. Isn't that a better deal for a team right now? To have D'Angelo Russell making $8 million less than Kyrie Irving? Because Kyrie Irving is the main guy. He's not going to get you anywhere. I would much rather have D'Angelo Russell. And you think about it, Brad Stevens has done a great job with guards, right? Guards always thrive in Brad Stevens' system. You go back to Isaiah Thomas, who Sacramento didn't want and Phoenix didn't want, and he brings him in here and he makes him into like a fringy MVP candidate. Then you think about Kyrie Irving, had his best statistical season this year with the Celtics. Even Terry Rozier, inefficient Terry Rozier, actually looked like a pretty good guard to the point where he was actually getting a nickname, Scary Terry. Now, he was sued for the logo and all that because he basically ripped it off from Scream. But nonetheless, Terry Rozier is somebody that people were high on because he was thriving in Brad Stevens' system. Any point guard that runs Brad Stevens' system, like to the way Brad Stevens wants to run it, they actually are successful. That's why I look at D'Angelo Russell. Outside of Kyrie Irving, he's the most talented guy that would be in Brad Stevens' system. He's a more talented player than is Isaiah Thomas, not to mention he takes pressure off Tatum and Jaylen Brown, who neither one of those guys creates for other people. You put D'Angelo Russell in that role, and you have a 23-year-old point guard and a 21- and a 22-year-old wingman in terms of Tatum and Jaylen Brown. That's what I'd like to see this team do. None of this crap about settling for second-tier free agents. Nick Vucevic, give me a break. That guy was a turtle in the postseason as a liability defensively. I have no interest in that guy whatsoever in terms of a max contract this summer. You missed out on Davis and Kyrie. Okay, fine. All right, that sucks. But don't settle for a guy like Nick Vucevic. All right, thanks to Nick for producing. I'll talk to you at some point this week on WEI. We're going to turn it over to Sunday Night Baseball. You got the Cardinals and the Angels coming up. I'm Brian Barrett. Have a great night, everybody. Be safe and be well.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.